books. How much schooling did you have?
I'll tell you a little secret. I left school. I had an eighth grade education. I've been going to school for the last 30 years, off and on. Psychology, anthropology, Plato, American Dilemmas, you name them, I've read them. But if I woke up in a house that didn't have a book in it, I don't know. I just figured we'll burn it down. It wouldn't be any good. To me, they're my lifeblood. And sometimes I think maybe that I have pushed this theory too far. Because there have been great people that didn't bother about books, and I know this. And sometimes I think maybe I bugged my son with this too much. I harp on it all the time. Read, 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 read. And I guess this could be like a broken record, you know what I mean? So I don't do it anymore. If you want to, okay. If you don't, that's your business. Get you some records and play them. There's reading records, you know what I mean? That's the way you feel about it. So I don't anymore. Because I figure I've overdone it.
You were thinking about Marvin attending Crane.
Well, Marvin was doing very poorly. And I was getting letters, you know. Of course, you know, they send you all these little items. Come to school because your child is not working up to his capacity. That means he's not doing anything. He can't read, he can't spell. And I don't know why they don't just tell you the truth about it instead of all using all these little vague false phrases.
You visited Crane.
Yeah, oh, I went to Crane. And, oh, yeah, by Marvin having three study periods in a row. Gee, this is kind of crazy. Studying what? So I went, and before I went to the office, I went to see this study hall. And this is the auditorium. This auditorium has a false ceiling in it. And there's very few lights. And there's children everywhere, male and female. And the only thing they could do in there is make love, you know. So I went back to this counselor and I told him, I says,
much light there?
There is none, hardly. In fact, most of the kids can't read anyway, but if they could, they wouldn't be able to see. So I went back to the counselor and I said to him, I said, I stopped first to see your study hall. He said, yes. Well, he said, there's a false ceiling there, and it'll cost $10,000 to put up this business of putting the lights in, and you know, the school system doesn't have any money, and blah, blah, blah. I said, but in the meantime, what are you going to do about all these children in there? These boys and girls, these young men and women. I said, they may can't read, but they can do other things in there, such as getting babies. He said, well, we don't have anywhere else to put them. And this was the answer I got. You're talking about teachers. I bet he never had the same teacher twice in 2 weeks and 2 years. Substitute. Right here in Medill. It's the same thing at Crane. It's no different.
Medill and Crane both are overwhelmingly Negro schools.
Right. And listen, I tell you something else. I think it's a disgrace to keep on calling these places school. I think the best thing we can say about them, these are meeting places, you know, where people get up every morning, give their children $1.75 or whatever the heck they give them, and these kids go off to these meeting places, schools you learn in. You see, they could take a storefront on Roosevelt Road anywhere, clean it up, put some seats in there, and put some books in it. But see, you can't learn anything where there isn't any books. Marvin went to school a whole half a year at Crane, didn't have a book. I went to find, I thought it was lying. This just can't be true. I went to Marvin's teacher and I said to her, I said, you mean to tell me that they don't have any books? She had about 10 sheets of paper stapled together. She said, well, this is a new program that we're trying out in, I think it was in arithmetic, too, of all things. And she said, and this is all we have. She is the only person who has this. As long as they're going to staple them together, they're going to give every kid in the joint one. Nobody had one but her. These are facts.
So we come to the last couple of questions. Here we come. We'll see the last couple of questions. Yes, what would you like to see now for yourself?
Oh, boy. You know what? The only thrill now for me is to see my grandchild come and see what I can do about this. Won't that be fun? You know, trying to teach him to paint. I don't want to really make him, but I hope I'll be able to afford, like, the things that would give him incentive to create. Painting, music, literature, all these things that can free his little soul and he can just go on and do the things he would like to do. And I'd like to make enough money to do that, help him do it. And this is about the only thing I think I really want.
How do you feel about your son going down to Selma, meeting Sheriff Clark face to face, or
here again,
ways, and sitting in here and being arrested?
I was like any other Negro mother would be. Here again, this is the reason why I told you what I did in the first place. But I had to make up in my mind now, am I going to give him a chance to be a man or am I not? I had to take that chance, and I took it. And had my sleepless nights.
You were scared?
Scared to death.
But you're proud.
I was very proud. I took that chance with my very expensive telephone bill. You know, I was very proud for him. I was glad to know that he had enough courage to want to go. Then I was afraid that he's too young, because he was only 16, to really know what was happening. He was born in Detroit, Michigan. He thought he'd had it before, but I knew he had it then. But I couldn't afford to tell him. Because then, here again, I would have been sheltering him and I wouldn't have given him a chance to be a man. And this was his chance. And I didn't want to steal it.
Mrs. Lucy Jefferson, Chicago. I'll be back with a word about next week's profile program after a word from our sponsors. Next week at the same time, another profile from Division Street America. Eva Barnes, former tavern keeper, landlady, living somewhere in a southwestern suburb of Chicago. That will be part two of a four-part series, Thursday nights at 8:00.